Hello, hello. I am Karen Jean-Francois, and this is the Women in Data podcast. A podcast where every other week I interview some of the most inspiring women working in data. They discuss how data is used in various industries, share their knowledge and experience in the field, and equip you with tips to help you overcome challenges on your career and feel great. Let's get straight to it. Today's episode is an incredible conversation that I believe everyone should listen to. That said, my guest, Raquel, shares some traumatic women health issues that she experienced. While the conversation starts on the topic of working in data in the Caribbean, it moves on to being a female business owner, and Raquel shares her near-death experience due to severe preeclampsia. She talks about child loss and multiple miscarriages. If you're dealing with mental health issues related to child loss, I would like to encourage you to have this in mind as you decide whether to listen to the episode or not. Hello, I have a super special guest today with me, and this is Raquel Seville, who is the founder and CEO of Data Affluent Limited. And why I'm saying super special guest is because Raquel and I, we met very randomly at a conference in South Africa. So that was the BIN Innovation Fest in South Africa. And I realized once I met her that I had never met a female leader, I guess, in the space of data who was from the Caribbean. So straight away, I thought I need to bring her on the podcast. She is incredible, fun, easy to speak with, and I can't wait to have this conversation today with her. We are going to talk about being a female business owner, but also the impact of being a woman when you work in data. And something that Raquel said that really resonated with me is that there is no separation between being a woman and a professional. And yes, we talk about being women who work in data, but I never thought about it as one and how that was impacting myself and my career and how I was seeing things. So it's really great to have Raquel here to talk about that. Hi, Raquel.
Hello. Hi, Karen. Very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Before we get into today's topic, can I invite you to introduce yourself?
So again, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. And again, congrats with all the work that you and the team do with the Women in Data podcast. Yes. So I am Raquel Seville. And as you said, I am from the Caribbean, from the beautiful island of Jamaica. I live in Kingston, and I run a company, which is now a startup company called Data Affluent Limited. And we are focused around, we're a data science company, right? But what we're focused around is the financial space. Yeah. And we're focused around taking data from different stock markets in the Caribbean and also emerging markets as well, and ensure that we can provide the insights and analysis to institutional investors or any other investors who would be in need of that sort of analysis. And using analytics, using AI, and also using quite a bit of deep-rooted data science principles to pull the insights and to be able to provide that to a person. So I also was the CEO of BI Brains Caribbean as well, which would have been a consultancy and training company. And I've been in the data space for, I don't want to age myself, but I'm thinking I'm looking at almost 2 decades now being in data. It's been a very long time. My first job was actually a data analyst. I've had a data scientist role, data analyst, ETL, engineer role. I've had like all the different roles in data, which have been quite fun. And before I transitioned into entrepreneurship, I was the director for analytics for Cayman Wireless / Liberty Global, which is a telecommunications company. And that was my last stint in the corporate space before transition to entrepreneurship. So it's been quite a journey, quite a journey.
Yeah, I was going to say, what an incredible journey, because you started as a data analyst, just like me.
Yeah.
And seeing how you went from being an analyst to working in data science, doing different things with data, moving into leadership, leading like analytics and data science function, and then starting your own business is incredible. It just shows us how much we can do with the skills we have. And I remember reading a post a couple of days ago saying that CDO might be the new path to CEO nowadays. So that's quite fun. Watch this space. So you talked a bit about your career so far. Sorry, I have a very annoying question to ask. I live in London, and this is no data related at all. I live in London, and we have this thing where we just put all Caribbean food under one umbrella, and that annoys me because I am pretty sure that whatever I'm eating on my island is not what you're eating on your island. And I've never actually been to Jamaica. I need to go at some point. At lunch I had a roti jerk chicken, and I want to know if that is something you would eat back home.
Roti jerk chicken. That's an interesting combination. Yeah, but I would try the jerk chicken roti though. I would definitely try it.
Okay, you tell me if that was a good combo.
Yeah.
Obviously, as I said, live in the UK, I breathe data in the UK, but I also know from people who are back home that data elsewhere can be very different. So there are also some people in Africa talking about how little access there is to data in terms of all the research and everything that's done around data is targeted at Europe and the US. And before we talk about being a woman and a professional, I would love to get a better understanding of what the data scene is like in Jamaica.
I mean, in Jamaica, and I think also, I'll speak to Jamaica and then also a little bit about the wider Caribbean as well. So the data scene in Jamaica is, I wouldn't say it's at the level of maturity that I would want it to be, and a lot of other data professionals would want it to be. We know that we don't have that maturity, at least across the majority of companies. Now, what I notice is that there are specific industries or specific companies that will be much further ahead of the curve, and they kind of have to be. So like telecommunications, they have a lot of data. They've always had a lot of data. They've always been ahead of the curve. They've always been using data to make decisions, to influence product, to influence service, to influence pricing. And another space as well in Jamaica, and honestly also in the Caribbean, because most of the telecommunications providers are right across the Caribbean, like Digicel, persons are familiar. If you've ever traveled to the Caribbean, you may know Digicel, you know Cameron Wireless. These go right across the Caribbean islands, right? They're touching sometimes 20, 30 islands. So telco is one, and then also banking is another, like the financial sector. So these two industries or sectors are very, very keen on data and ensuring that, one, they have specialized teams focused on data. And I mean, that may also be quite similar to also global trends as well, right? What I'm seeing now is that there are other industries that realize, especially since COVID was actually a blessing in a lot of ways for companies in the Caribbean and in Jamaica, where they now realize, okay, so we have to be digital. We can't just have this paper-based or manual process or functionality anymore. You know, we have to try to find some way to digitize this particular thing. So what you'll find is the CDO role that you just mentioned in Jamaica and in the Caribbean is now the chief digital officer.
Okay.
So it's more digital transformation that is a focus for a lot of companies. So a lot of companies are on their digital transformation journey, which we know that was like maybe 10 years, 15 years ago as a global trend, right?
Do you feel like, because you described, you know, this shift that was accelerated by COVID, so with the different... Mm-hmm. So you had telecom and banking that were ahead of the curve, which is something I see on my island as well. But then now with COVID, other organizations are accelerating and they're getting in place more digital and focusing on that. Do you feel like companies are able to learn from the mistakes that Europe or the US have done, or is it a case of we're going to just be doing the same mistake as well?
That's a really good question. I think in a lot of ways, there are companies that are looking, because to be honest, like companies in the Caribbean, I know for Jamaica specifically, they do look to the international and global trends, right? What's happening in Europe, what's happening in the US, you know, what's happening in more developed markets, what are they doing, what are the trends? So I think some companies are definitely trying to learn from some of those mistakes. And trying to ensure that they're building processes, they're building things and putting things in place that can help them to get to where they need to get to faster, right? You don't have to make these mistakes that these companies would have done when they're going through their whole digital transformation journey. You can get there faster if you, you know, make some changes. But there are still companies, unfortunately, that I don't know if it's maybe just culture, because we know culture is a big thing, right? We just pick culture that's causing some of the challenges where some companies are, honestly, they're going to have to make those mistakes, learn from them, and then try to set themselves on their own path. Because there are differences, obviously, between, you know, a telco company in Jamaica versus a telco company in Europe or in the US. You know, there are still some differences. But I think some companies are definitely learning, while others, yeah, culture is a big thing.
It's funny that you're saying that the culture and how people are might feel like it's not as adapted and they have to learn by themselves. But I want to say from that perspective, I'm not worried for the Caribbean because I've never met people that are as resilient as people in the Caribbean. I mean, you have like a group of islands and people who have to go through so many natural disasters on an annual basis with very little means sometimes. And then they just stand back up and go on with life and fixing. So I think he's going to be fine.
I agree for sure. Very resilient people. I agree with you there. And the thing though, like even though we may have some unique challenges and we're not at the level of maturity as some other more developed countries or markets, we still have like some of the same issues.
And in terms of you being a female data professional and a female business owner, how does that really impact your career, your life?
I think as you said before, in terms of there really is like no separation between you own and operate a business, you're a woman, there really isn't. Like I'm not being able to say like there's a, like I can put one to one side and then put one to another and compartmentalize my life in that way because it's so intertwined and connected. It is that way for a lot of different things, right? So it is that way for one. I think as women, we have a lot that we bring to the table in terms of just how we will reason through things, just how we will have empathy, will be natural nurturers, will be natural sort of caregivers in a way. For some women that comes very natural to them, so we do bring that difference, I think, to the space, right? That in a lot of ways can be very much male dominated. Now the interesting thing about Jamaica, and I think it's another Caribbean island I can't remember, is that we have like the most female managers. Like we have more female than male managers, right? Now the interesting part about that is once you start going up to the executive level, you start seeing more men than women. So what you have is, I guess, a lot of women who are not breaking through the glass ceiling, who are getting to the executive leadership role. And there are different reasons for that. I mean, if you look at it from, let's say, the university level, we have, for us in Jamaica, and I know that's the case as well for some Caribbean islands, we have more women who will matriculate for university. We'll have more women who will graduate, right? More women who enter the university system and more women who leave. And naturally, more women who will get jobs and also at least rise to the level of managers in those jobs. Yeah. So that the data checks out for that. But we're not seeing as much of that transition for the executive, the CEO roles, the CFO roles, CDO roles. We're not seeing as much, especially boards. A lot of boards are very, very heavy on just sometimes a lot of them are all male boards. In a lot of instances for different companies, things are changing, I will admit. But however, the challenge with a lot of women is that one, you get to maybe manager level and then you get married, you start having children, and then that changes your focus.
Yeah.
It's no different really transitioning to having a company or being an entrepreneur. There's still, you have a family, you know, you want to have children. You're doing all of these different things and balancing and juggling all these different things with owning and operating a company. And the challenge still persists. Like, you can't give 100% to everything, right? And there's some things that will take the focus over others, and you have to make a sacrifice, and you have to try and balance all of those things. So it's really difficult to compartmentalize, like, okay, I'm a woman over here and I'm operating a business, or I'm an executive, or there really is no separation between the two.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation with Robin Sutara a couple of years ago on the podcast, and that was for International Women's Day. And she was talking about something very similar. So she's done a lot of things in her career. So she had children when she was young. She was working at the army on helicopters. Then she went and started working at Microsoft, did a law degree, passed the bar, did loads of things. And I was thinking, how did you manage to do all of that? And what she was saying, so you know how you said you can't give 100% to everything? She was talking about the fact that sometimes we feel like we have to do everything at once, but the way to do it is really maybe to prioritize some of the things. So that's how she did it. So she said, yes, I'm a mother. I'm focusing on being a mother right now, doing this. And then when she was passing the bar, this is what was their priority. And then you have to shift things a bit around to be able to get to where you want to be. So it's very interesting that what you're saying, you can't compartmentalize, but you might have to shift your focus around depending on where you are. And something you said that's very interesting as well is the fact that, you know, you have in Jamaica, the majority of the managers are female, but then when you go up, you don't have that many, and you are talking about how life gets in the way. And I remember last year being at a Women in Data event where they were launching Menopause X, and they were talking about how actually for some women, menopause is really a trigger to exit their career. I'm guessing for you who own your own business, I mean, if I'm feeling unwell, and I guess that's true for men and women, but we have extra problems on the health side. So I'm employed, so I can take the time off and then go back to work. While when you take the time off, that's time off your business. So that means no money coming in. You might be losing clients. How do you actually manage this?
Yeah, so that is definitely, that's definitely a really huge challenge and dilemma as well. And I always say, and I'll say this on the Women in Data podcast with no reservations, that if you are in a stable, like well-paid job, you know, stay there in a lot of ways. Entrepreneurship is really not easy. And it's really not easy to navigate as a female. I think I'm honestly very lucky and blessed that I have a wonderful husband who's very supportive and he's great, excellent. But even with that support and even with having someone who is literally there in your corner 24/7, I've still had to navigate other challenges as well. So, I mean, I spoke to you about having to take time off to do surgery. So I had to do a myomectomy, and I think some women will know what this is. And if you don't, it really is a surgery to remove fibroids. So you have like hysterectomy, which is like fully removing your uterus, which, you know, we really don't want women to do, especially in their very, you know, young childbearing years. So a myomectomy is sort of a option for that, where you can, you know, the doctor will go in, remove whatever is there. And this is done in some ways as well for persons who have endometriosis and some other challenges. I used to say, like, we women, we have other challenges as well. Yes. Right? It's not just being a woman and running the business. It's also the fact that you also have, like, physical challenges. So I had to plan that surgery around my company, knowing that December would have been the downtime for my company. And I had to kind of plan the surgery knowing that, like, I had to change. And the doctor gave me options. I'm like, can I get something in December? Because it's going to be very challenging working on all these projects that I have to do to try and do this in October, September. But December, most friends are off on vacation. It's coming around to Christmas time. And, you know, you have a lot of downtime. So that's how I was able to schedule. And it sounds crazy, like, saying, you're like, oh, wow, like, you really were trying to work around. But that is the reality. Like, it wouldn't have been possible to do a surgery like that, which is really like a C-section that you're recovering from. And then just jump back the next day into business operations, right? It's a lot of different factors that you have to navigate. And it is very, very challenging. I'll definitely say that, right? Outside of just, you know, running a business, which is a challenge in itself, you have all of these other things that you have to think about. You want to have children. How do you think through that process, right? And what comes with being pregnant, you know, what comes that entire journey, that entire process for the 9 months, and what does that look like, and how do you even prepare yourself, prepare your team, right? If you don't have like a successor in your business, where you're like, okay, this person is definitely, I can step away and fully leave all the operations to this person. It's not like a small businesses don't necessarily have that. They may have someone that can do some of the operational stuff, but most likely it's not going to be split across multiple persons doing different things, and you still have to be available for some things as well because you have a small operation that you're doing. Yeah. So it is definitely a challenge. Yes.
Thank you so much for sharing that. These are challenges that I believe we don't talk about enough. So endometriosis is something that people have been talking a bit more about. Mm-hmm. But although I feel like, you know how it is, there are fashion waves, and I feel like it's gone down a bit compared to 2 years ago. But when it comes to period, it feels like people are kind of ashamed to say, I'm on my period, I feel bad. And you know how you were talking about how COVID has helped from some perspective. At least now a lot of us are working remotely, and that means that if you have, I know I have very heavy periods, so I can just stay home and not go to the office and deal with that. I have you know me, I'm very transparent. I just think what's come to my mind. But I have a very horrible story of, I think that was when I was still at Cardlytics, so that was already a couple of years ago, when I was in the office and I basically dirtied my jeans, and then I started crying in the office being like, oh my God. But at least, you know, there are some places where people are receptive to these kind of things. And I feel like I've been very lucky from this perspective where my head of data was male. And he took me aside and he was like, Karen, what's going on? Tell me. I explained the situation. So picture me talking to a guy about me having my period and dirtying my jeans, and I want to go home because I'm having a nervous breakdown. And he was very understanding. So I feel like the more we talk about it, we explain the problems, people are understanding, and then they can support. That helped me a lot. And I feel like the more I talk about it, the more I hear women who had similar stories. And as you said, you can't really separate it. I can't be like, period, please bleed less, I have to go to the office right now. Yeah, but you also went through a very traumatizing experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, maybe experiences. But yeah, so I actually suffered, like, I would say, multiple child loss.
Sorry.
The first, yeah, thank you. The first having been, actually when I was in corporate, funny enough. I mean, it was my first pregnancy. Everything was going great. And then I started getting, like, these crazy headaches. And I'm like, oh, this is not normal. It's like pretty much 7 months. Pregnant at the time, I was like, oh, I don't get headaches. I didn't get headaches for the entire, and it was just very odd. I called my doctor, she's like, okay, you need to come in. And when I came in, she was just like taking my blood pressure, but she wasn't saying anything to me. She did like three times, she was just quiet, and she was like, okay, you need to, you know, go to the hospital and I'll meet you there. And I'm like, okay, what is happening? So I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'll just go in for a routine check, maybe spend the weekend, I'll be out. But that wasn't the case. The fast forward, actually had suffered preeclampsia, which, again, I don't know if I'm like, if the listeners are familiar with some of these terminologies, but preeclampsia is, I would say, it's actually a very scary diagnosis to have when you're pregnant, because the only cure is delivery of the of the child, of the fetus. Because what happens is that your blood pressure goes up, which becomes very dangerous. You have like protein in the urine, and it starts to actually impact like your kidneys and your organs. So it becomes very dangerous to you and also dangerous to the fetus, and can be fatal in a lot of instances, especially if it's not caught early. Had to deliver early, which obviously was a very traumatic experience, I'd say, and in some ways, yes, traumatic, but in also a lot of ways, very life-changing, because it helped me to view, one, I didn't even know about precapture, just being honest. I did not know. I may have seen it somewhere, but I didn't know that this thing existed and was so, like, almost near fatal. So, like, I started researching and reading up on these other things and trying to figure out, like, okay, why does this happen? And and then the research started showing, because I'm in Jamaica, and when I go to the hospital, the doctor says, yeah, these cases happen a lot. We don't know why, but it happens more with Black women. So I started realizing, okay, you have these sort of situations happening a lot more for African women, or, you know, just Black women. And, you know, what's the difference? Like, why is it that in some instances, like, we're getting more aggressive fertility challenges, like endometriosis and fibroids is happening to, you know, Black women much younger. You know, it's not that it's not happening to other women, right? Because, like, the statistics on fibroids is, like, 80% or 90% of women will have fibroids at some point in their lives. But for, like, white women and Asian women, a lot of those women, it happens, like, in your 50s. So you're outside of your childbearing years, right? So the impact is different. Now, when you're in your 20s and you have fibroids, it's totally different than if you're in your 50s, 60s. It kind of led me down a rabbit hole, to be honest, in terms of just research and understanding why these things happen to, I mean, women in general, yes, like what's triggering it, but then also what's triggering it more aggressively in Black women. Is it our diet? Is it stress levels? Is it just hormone imbalances that we're struggling? Why would we have greater levels of hormone imbalances than other ethnicities? As a data person, it's very hard to just be like, yeah, you know, it happens. It's very hard because I'm trying to get to what is really driving it. Even for data affluent, like, part of what we want to do is we want to donate a part of our revenue to go towards that kind of research, even if it's studies, even if it's just, you know, looking at different data points, but trying to understand what's really triggering this, what's really behind this, and then how can we help women to have better outcomes so they don't have to go through what I went through. They don't have to go through, you know, the pain, like painful periods or even heavy periods. You know, what's driving that? That's something I'm very, very passionate about. And I'm hoping that, you know, we can at least find some answers or find some ways to make things better for women.
Yeah, I'm really sorry you had to go through this. It sounds really... I mean, I have no words.
It is.
I feel like giving you a hug right now.
Yeah, I'll give a virtual hug. I'm laughing because I'm in a totally different space. I've had therapy and I've gone through, you know, so many different things. And as I said, it's like multiple. I've actually had miscarriages as well. So I've gone through those different things. But I think if anything, it has actually helped me to be a little bit more like, what's that word? Like, determined to figure out what is going on. Why does this happen?
There is a lot around. So you know, all the medical research, not all the medical research, but a lot of it is around men and also the white population, and there is very little data for us. So thankfully there are people like you, and there is also Women in Data trying to collect more information so we can then change things in the long run, but it is going to take a while. And on the, I guess, a much lighter topic, something I find is we're really trying to always, everyone behave the same way. And I find that something that empowered me to work better, be happier, feel better in my own shoes is to understand that my body is actually unique in some sense. and things that work for someone are not going to work for me. I know you mentioned that Black women are more likely to have high blood pressure. I was diagnosed with high blood pressure, and all the doctors here are like, oh, you're very young. Are you sure it's not your lifestyle? And I'm like, have you seen me? I go running every 2 seconds. I don't smoke. This is not my lifestyle. It's genetic. So there is loads of things like that. And when you think about, when we talk about performing at work and in life and how to be driven and all things, it's not really adapted to women, because with everything that you have described, it's not like we can wake up every single day and do the same thing and behave the same way. Yeah, so I don't know if you remember Jessica Hennis Hill. I think she won the Olympics. She won quite a few world championships running for Team GB, doing heptathlon. And I remember she was my hero because she ran, did her thing, jumped through, through everything, won the Olympics, went, had a baby, and then came back and then won again. And I was thinking, how the hell did you do that? This is incredible. And she started this business now called Genis around how actually we're training athletes, but the way we're training female athletes is the way we would be training male athletes, while we need to be training differently because of how our cycle is different. And basically there are moments in the month where you should be doing more strength training and moments where you should not be doing any. And she created the whole business around that. And I'm thinking, if we were living our life in general a bit more like this, so being more mindful of our energy level and what we can do, maybe it would be a bit easier.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I didn't know about that business, but that makes sense. We are different, right? Genetically, and obviously for women, we go through so many different things on a month-to-month basis. And I agree with you in terms of like just having a structured day. So I try to adopt like positive habits. So I'll get up, I'll meditate, I'll try to, you know, pray, try to center myself before I start to check emails and do everything else. But it's not 4 a.m. 5 a.m. Right? It may look like a 7 a.m. on some morning. Maybe some mornings are 6:30, and maybe some mornings is 8 a.m. Right? It may look different on different days, and I give myself that space. And I think as women, like sometimes we just need to give ourselves that space to understand that if I don't feel so great, like you said, that could just be like that morning could just be the first day of my period, and I'm like, yeah, I'm struggling to get out of bed today. So I'm going to start my medication at 8:30 a.m. Doesn't give me much time before I have my calls at 9 a.m., but that's just the space I can give myself for today. Maybe tomorrow I can do 7, but I mean, I've never found that to be effective for me. Like, I have to be up at 4 a.m. and I have to do this and this. And then I think for some women, it can work, to be honest. And some women have no issues, but for most of us, we have to be mindful that, you know, it's going to be different. We do have to account for those differences.
And be kind to yourself about it.
Yeah.
That took me a while. I remember really beating myself up because I would not stick to my routine. And now I learned to say, well, that's okay. It's like that today. To close the episode, I would love to know what you're currently learning or are interested in learning.
All right. So currently, quite a few different things, actually. So with the company that I'm now focused on, the startup that I'm now focused on, we have a strong like AI focus as well. So we're doing a lot of work, a lot of research into AI, into different tools, into different techniques, strategies. So that's fun. To be honest, I don't know who can say they're true experts on AI. Like something changes every day, to be honest. There's something new every day, but that's definitely something that I'm passionate about. And I kind of feel like it's going to be like the game changer for the future. So for persons who kind of made the investment now to understand what is happening so they don't get left behind, how, you know, sort of the new world will be and how this will kind of be like a baseline for so many things that you won't even know it's a baseline for the things that you're using or interacting. That's a big thing that I'm passionate about and also very committed to continuously learning. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. It was a very heavy in some moments, but super interesting conversation, and I loved every moment of it. Thank you.
Same here. Thank you, Karen. Very happy to be here. It's very very, very exciting for me.
Thank you for listening to the Women in Data podcast. We will be back in a couple of weeks with a new guest. Until then, if you have 2 minutes, it would be great if you could leave us a rating or a review, as it helps not only to make the podcast more visible, but also to enhance the content. If you don't want to miss the next episode, follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We are also on LinkedIn. And if you wish to, you can even register to the community for free. All you have to do is head to womenindata.co.uk. Have a great day.